You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everyone? This is Pat Loika. You're listening to another brand new episode of Loikamania, and I am joined this week by one of my regular rotating co-hosts, Mr. Antonio Cuneo. Welcome back, Antonio.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Pretty good, sir. It's good to have you back here. We've been, of course, we've been podcasting through a different show, but that's neither here nor there. We'll get to that later. We are joined by a very special guest, a guy whose work I've followed his stuff for a long time now. Like, I've followed his stuff from his earlier days in Top Cow, of course, his Marvel stuff, and now he's doing some work for DC. I'm talking, of course, about Mr. Mike Choi. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good, sir. It's amazing to see how far you've gone as far as your work is concerned, because I remember your earlier days when you were doing Witchblade with Ron Mars. You had your style back then, I guess it was for lack of a better term, it was very heavily influenced by the studio you're working at, which was Top Cow. And I was always curious as to how you ended up working for Top Cow in the beginning.
That's kind of a long and winding story, I guess. I got into comics kind of later on in life. I'd pick up one or two here and there, but it wasn't until college where I really thought that I needed one more thing to, help impress the women. So I decided to get into comics. I think my first comic book that I read as a brand new comic book hardcore fan was the Daredevil, the Kevin Smith Daredevil books. So it was around that time, and then right after that it was I started just picking up Preacher. This was when Preacher was still going on, and this is around the time I was getting into comic books. And I think around then a book that I really started to like were Rising Stars and Midnight Nation. And they were done by Top Cow, and I think that was the thing that introduced me to the company. I became a fan. And how I got my foot in is that, once I left college and started working for IBM, this was when around the time when I was also trying to – I think everyone who reads comic books and has, like, a creative bone in their body, like, kind of tries to dabble in, like – art or writing, but a lot of times art. And I was one of those people, and I tried to try my hand at drawing, and I always doodled as a kid, but I never took art classes or anything. I think my last art class was in 7th grade, 8th grade, Mr. Buck's class at South Island School in Hong Kong. But so it was never something I wanted to pursue, but I was just trying my hand at it. And Top Cow, I think this was 2002, where they were auctioning off a foosball table that was really old, but then they drew all over it and decided to auction it off. And this was all I had. All I had was time and money, because this was back in the IBM days, and I decided to buy it now at a ridiculous price. For the opportunity to have my portfolio looked at, a portfolio that didn't exist at the time, looked at by Mark Silvestri and Mike Turner. And basically that was the kind of just complete douchebag I was. I was just like, hey, I'll buy it for the opportunity to show you my portfolio. Again, a portfolio that did not exist at the time. I was barely drawing. And they said, yeah, sure, because, the price was just that high. And I went over there with a pickup truck, and I picked it up, and I played foosball with Mike Turner and a lot of the guys that were there, and got the foosball table, came back. On the way there, actually, my bag got stolen. My IBM laptop and my portfolio were taken, and as well as a Jim Lee page that I picked up at a con. a couple months before. It was actually a Jim Lee Strangers in Paradise page.
Whoa.
Which was unique as hell, and I can't believe that. So basically, I just showed up without even a portfolio. So as far as Top Cal was concerned, I was the douchebag that bought the fucking foosball table. Can I say the F word?
Yeah, sorry.
So I was just that guy. But the thing is, because of that, I mean, they kind of knew who I was. They didn't have any idea if I could draw or anything. But you know, I was just a name that was in their head, I guess, or a face that they were familiar with, and. This is right around the time, I think, winter 2000, let me think, 2002 was around the time where I was just like, you know what, I really like my job at IBM. I could see myself doing this forever, but I don't love it. You know, and this is when I was having one of those existential moments, I guess, where, you know, you take yourself way too seriously. And I was just kind of, you know, I don't want to see myself doing this forever. I mean, the way I put it is that if I continued on with IBM, you know, just had a good life in consulting and tech stuff, I like the job. Even now, sometimes I miss, you know, coding. But, it was one of those things where I could say, you know what? Give me $1 million and you can age me 40 years. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Like, I'd retire at 60 bucks, but at 60 years old, but... You know, I'd have a lot of money, but, you know, I wouldn't have gotten anything out of my job short of the money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to do something other than that, and I called up Renee, who was the editor-in-chief at Top Cal at the time, and I said, hey, is there anything that I could do for you guys? This is around the time where Mike and Frank Mastromoro, they left Top Cal to form Aspen, and... Frank, I think, was the marketing vice president at the time at Top Cal. And basically, I was just like, hey, you know, my minor was marketing. Is there any way that I could maybe go in there and become an intern, help around, and, you know, just kind of like snidely kind of, you know, make my way possibly as a marketing guy? And they were like, sure. They had an intern apartment. So basically, you know, my... I'd have a place to crash. It was basically someone's couch, but I'd have a place to crash for a couple months to get my, you know, to get set up a little bit, maybe find another job or whatever. But, you know, I just basically said, that sounds really good. I quit IBM, you know, making sure I didn't, you know, burn any bridges, but I quit IBM and moved to LA with nothing but an opportunity to become an intern at Top Cal. And that's just basically, you know, how that happened. Just kind of showed up at the office helping out. And, the studio, this is back when they had a studio with, Mark, obviously, and, a bunch of other guys. And I basically just showed up every so often, took a spare desk, and would just try to draw like I was doodling at home. And, getting tips from Mark and the guys that were there, like Eric Basalua, Tyler Kirkham, all of those guys, Joe Benitez, hopefully I got better and better until I, you know, got my first job on Witchblade a year and a half afterwards. So, yeah,
So you
that's
said,
how it happened.
Oh, yeah, that's a hell of a story, man. I pulled it
really long-winded. Sorry about that.
That's perfectly fine, man.
It's definitely very cool.
Yeah.
You're going to have to edit this all the way down. Sorry.
No, this is good. Now, you said you had to move. Where were you based out of originally?
At the time, I was based out of Houston.
Holy shit. So you drove all the way from Houston to LA to pick up that table.
A football table? Exactly, yeah. And my rental truck got broken into in San Antonio. So that
oh, my God. Oh, man, that's crazy. But, you know, it does speak a lot about you that you actually went through the whole thing anyway, because that's a long drive. I mean, I did a drive from San Diego to Dallas, and I couldn't stand it after that. But
you know what? It's not a bad drive. I mean, I just had my Case Logic full of CDs, and I just it's 1,400 miles of just open road. It's actually not bad. I mean, the drive where was it Lord Retail drove from North Carolina to San Diego? That's a drive. That's the entire country right there.
did you do the drive by yourself?
Yeah. I was really paranoid that I was – I'd never done anything like that before, and I was really paranoid that I was going to run out of gas. So, like, in the back of the truck, I also had, you know, those red plastic canisters, yeah, that you can fill with extra gas. And I had two of those in the back just in case I ran out of gas. And now I don't even care because I know exactly where you can pick up gas, like, on the way on that route. But what the funny thing is that so I had this full tank of gas in the back, and I got to Los Angeles, and while in Santa Monica, I saw this couple in a Mercedes, and they'd ran out of gas, and the guy was just like, oh, crap, and he had to walk to a gas station. I mean, it wasn't that far as Santa Monica, but I saw what his situation was, and I was like, hey, do you want this tank of gas? And the guy's like, yeah, sure, man. And I was like, hey, I don't need it because, hey, it turns out there are gas stations between Texas and Los Angeles, so I don't need this anymore. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll take it. And, you know, it was like a good Samaritan thing. And, you know, I left. And my cousin, who was with me at the time, he was kind of quiet the entire, you know, during the entire exchange. And afterwards, he was like, hey, do you know who that girl was that was with that guy? And I was like, who? And he says, oh, Amy Smart. I was like,
oh man,
I don't know who that. I was like, I don't know who that is. But then after that, I watched all the movies, and I was like, oh, cool, that was Amy Smart. Yeah, but anyway, that's a pointless story. Sorry, but,
that's fine, man. This is actually one of the reasons why we wanted to do this. Just all this stuff.
I'm actually like a big fan of. Stories where people meet famous people, but they don't realize it. And then and it's like when someone's like, oh, dude, did you know who that was? And you're like, no, who was it? It's just some really nice person. Oh, it's this. And you're like, oh.
You know what? That's awesome. Like, my favorite one of those and also least favorite one of those is like, I was just, I can't remember where I was. It was definitely at Comic-Con, and I was just standing next to Joss Whedon, and I was like, I recognized him as Joss Whedon, but I was completely unfamiliar with anything that he'd done, and I was like, excuse me, are you Joss Whedon? He's like, yes, I am, and I was like, I really liked Alien Resurrection, and he was like, great, thanks a lot, and he kind of left. I think he was standing there and just left. He wanted to be anywhere but there, and afterwards, you know, I discovered Firefly and all that stuff, and now I'm a huge, you know, Firefly fan and fan of its punchlines and stuff, and I can't believe that was what I said to him, especially finding out afterwards, I think he disavowed, like, his involvement with Alien Resurrection or something, but, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that happens all the time in Comic-Con, I mean. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Oh man.
Yeah, this is my first interview type thing where I'm not typing, where I can actually like see all the garbage that I said, and I can actually go back and edit it. So, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine, man. This is actually what makes, you know, doing the interview, you know, the audio interview a lot more fun, because you just kind of go off on tangents, and yeah, I don't care. I mean, you listen to enough word balloon stuff, and you know, it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. But I'm so not going to listen to this. Like, I listen to, you know, Loikomania, and I listen to Word Balloon while I'm working and stuff, because that kind of stuff is like, it's good. I don't want to call it background noise, but at the same time, it's stuff that's going on around you where you can actually pay somewhat of like a tangential attention to it. Mm-hmm. But so it keeps you your mind going while you're working on your stuff. But yeah, I'm not going to listen to this episode.
I can understand that. I can't listen to myself talk either, to be honest.
Yes, that's why I'm just going to say whatever. And just kind of like, I'm going to disavow my relationship with this particular episode. So yeah.
All right. Now, you mentioned that you kind of got your training kind of on the spot over at the Top Cow, over at the studios. Like, I think it was called The Pit or something like that. I remember hearing about
The Pit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got your training there. Now, aside from, of course, you know, the basics of drawing, like, as far as your approach into putting a page together, you know, once you start drawing it, like, what's your typical process like? Like, what did you learn from there that you didn't know before?
Everything. I mean, I'm talking about everything. You know, there was a point where, like, the first after it was established, I guess, that I would want to become an artist. One of the first things that they did was give me a sample script page, and I honestly did not know what to do with it. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I'd never seen a script before. I didn't really know what to do, how to transform the words on the page into a page pitch as opposed to just drawing something. Hey, draw this person doing this or whatever. And, you know, basically completely from the ground up, I learned, you know, just how to do everything at the studio. yeah, it's that's the answer, I guess. Like, I learned everything. I don't even know if that was your question.
Well, yeah, okay, that works. I mean, what's your process like, though? Like, once you get a script, at least these days, what's your normal approach?
Okay, first of all, I'm going to preempt all of this, you know, rambling on my part to just tell you that I just woke up.
Okay.
we're still, I'm still, you know, recovering from the Christmas deadlines. So, like, what is it? I just turned in something this morning, and I got 8 hours of sleep, so, like, I'm just completely out of it right now. So, basically, my process is, what do you mean, like, after I get the script?
Yeah, once you get the script and after you read through it, what's the first thing you do? Or you know, do you like, say, thumbnail first, or do you lay out the page first, or, you know, just that sort of thing?
Yeah, everything's different. I mean, like, it depends. Like, ideally, what I'd like to do is get the entire script first. I mean, even before that, if I could, you know, if sometimes the writer will get a hold of me or even the editor and talk to me about the plot and even ask me, like, the kind of stuff that I want to draw. So in situations like that, I'm already kind of got an investment. I'm kind of already involved, and I kind of know what's coming up and stuff. Best case scenario is I get the script completely, and I lay it all out in little thumbnails, and I kind of see what the pages are going to look like from a micro standpoint of, like, you know, per page, per panel, and then from macro in terms of, like, you know, this bunch of pages is going to set up this scene, and it's going to look this kind of way, et cetera, et cetera. And that way you can actually, like, you know, establish styles and even, like, color schemes, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When I have involvement in terms of, you know, establishing, like, I want this scene to be in the sun. I want it to be kind of yellow. This one, I want it to be, you know, a certain mood where I want it to be blue, et cetera, et cetera. And that way would be the best way. But sometimes I get a script, like, piecemeal, mm-hmm. and that way you just kind of, like, have to kind of go on the fly. But I basically lay out as much as I can and then just go on a per-page, page-by-page basis.
Okay.
I mean, like, very recently, like, you know, it also depends on the story. I mean, every project, it's like, you know, I know that you draw a little bit. You draw, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And I say a little bit, but I can't think of any person that draws as much as you do. I mean, but basically, every project that I do, every project that I start, it's almost like... I think to myself, shit, I don't know how to draw. You know what I'm saying? It's like I have to learn from each project. It's like, I can't believe, like, you know. And so my styles are different sometimes, project to project. Like, Astonishing Thor didn't look anything like what I did for X-Force before that, or X-Men before that, or Demon Knights after that. Mm-hmm. Because I tried to just approach things differently. And my current, the project that I just turned in, which is, I guess I can talk about it because this isn't coming out till February, is a fill-in issue of Green Lantern.
Oh, wow.
And that was actually really cool, but, you know, I had to work through Christmas and I had to work through New Year's. But I colored that issue.
Oh.
So that was another thing where it was kind of like, you know, another approach of, like, well, you know, you kind of learn on the fly. And for those pages, I did basically the bare minimum of the pencils and ink that I could do to basically paint it. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot of fun. I mean, the thing is, like, I don't want to think of it as I penciled and inked it and then I colored it, because I kind of, like, separate these processes like a separate entity. But that wasn't kind of how it is. I think I can't remember Acuna.
Daniel Acuna. Yes.
Daniel Acuna. Yeah. Like, I think, I can't remember if he said it or someone like that said it, but they basically said that he draws just to give himself something to color. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you remember how, like, a lot of writers say that they started getting into writing because they just wanted to give themselves something to draw. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Brian was an artist, Ed was an artist, mm-hmm. Remender was an artist. I mean, they were all guys who got into writing from the art side first. And that's kind of how I'm realizing, like, what I'm doing is, like, when I color, it's like I draw something just to give myself something to color, because as far as I'm concerned, it's not a finished process once it's penciled. You know what I'm saying? Not anymore. And, you know, I just want to keep going with that stuff. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm not saying that, oh, I'm a good colorist. That's definitely not what I'm saying, because, in fact, I would argue that I'm actually a pretty shitty colorist. I would not hire me to color someone else's pencils. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you're learning. You know, you're kind of adding a new skill to what your current skill set, and basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's not so much that I finish a page and think to myself, oh, wow, that's a really good page. Mm-hmm. Because no matter what, I mean, even if it was just pencils or no matter what, like, I can actually look at a page and go, wow, this page reflects my best, the best expression of my abilities or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. But I, you know, for me to say, well, that's a good freaking page, you know, that's not going to be true, like, even a month down the road when you look back on it and consider what you've learned and all the mistakes that you see. And you know, so you don't ever want to think that. But definitely, like, on a page-by-page basis while I was coloring this book, you know, I've colored all my covers for DC and a few for Marvel. But, you know, when you're doing an entire book, you can see what you've learned on a page-to-page basis. And, like, you know, comparing, like, my last page to my very first page, it's just like, wow, I can't believe I approached the page doing it that way on the first time around, and now it's completely different. Like, even my processes are completely different, because, you know, you pick up stuff, you learn certain stuff, like, yeah, like, I was learning, like, all these tricks just by playing around in Photoshop, and maybe that's not the thing that DC wants to hear, that I'm basically getting paid to learn, you know, on the fly, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's actually a lot of fun. I mean, I definitely take more satisfaction from that than any kind of finished piece. Like, just, wow, the thing that I learned this way is much more valuable to me and much more inspiring to me. It keeps me going than any particular piece. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, it's you're an artist, and art is always evolving. You know, it says, I think it says a lot for your skill, because I've seen you draw over the years now, and I've found your art incredible from the beginning. So seeing your art get even better and better, and you trying new things, I mean, that's, I think, the whole point of being an artist. You know, for just an artist to do the same things over and over again gets kind of boring, but also for the artist as well. And so to hear you talking about new things and I mean, I'm looking forward to that issue of Green Lantern, and I'm looking forward to see how your art evolves, because I'm you know, just being a big fan of yours from when you started to now, is just, I don't know. It's really cool. I like this.
Yeah.
And, oh, thanks, man. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
And no problem.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, when you mentioned that DC's not paying you to, you know, learn the spot, I mean, I think, you know, it doesn't really matter to them. I think what matters to them is the finished product that they get, and I'm seeing the covers.
Oh, yeah. I'm not concerned. I mean, DC has been, like, very, very, like, I mean, they know exactly where I'm at in terms of my abilities and mm-hmm. stuff, and, you know, they I'm not, you know. Oh, I was just kidding about that. Like, DC's really nice. You know, have been really great about giving me opportunities about coloring. As have Marvel, honestly. So, yeah, I was just kidding about that. But you know what? Honestly, like, you know, back to what Antonio was talking about while saying how awesome I am, you know, which I totally appreciate. Not that at home. It's really one of those things where I don't think when you do a piece. You know, like I said, you can't just say, wow, that's an awesome piece or whatever. And you can't put too much, I guess, value into the finished product. Like, if you are, I think something that's helped me but also hurt me a lot of ways is that the thing that I value the most is, you know, the stuff that I've learned. You know what I'm saying? And when I say, like, you know, I've learned so much in coloring, I'm not even talking about, like, oh, wow, like, this stylistic. No, I'm talking about what Control Z does. You know what I'm saying? Like basic stuff like that. Like, it wasn't until, like, my 16th page where I realized the difference between pencil and brush in Photoshop, which should scare a lot of people when they hear that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a big deal. It's like, you know, hey, I discovered this thing called a pencil where I've been, you know, drawing with a chocolate bar this entire time. You know what I'm saying? It's like that kind of just, like, huge thing. But I'm learning on the fly because no one's teaching me this stuff. I just basically do what Photoshop allows me to do until it it gets to a certain point where I look at it and I go, yeah, okay, that's a finished page. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
but it's like your opinion of what makes a finished page, I mean, changes from time, you know, from piece to piece because of you know, what you've learned. And for me, definitely the thing that I like the most is like about this whole thing is what I learned, you know. And I guess, like, in a nutshell, that's kind of why, like, I can't remember what the guy's name was, but the guy that was, like, you know, followed by bleedingcool.com.
The
guy who's been kind of but he was following around this guy who was, like, kind of passing other people's work as his own.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. And like, some of the stuff that he was doing was some work that I had done. I can't remember from what issue, but it was stuff that I had done. And when someone forwarded that to me, like, you know, honestly, my first reaction was to be flattered. Hey, you think that that's going to help you get money? Hey, that's awesome, man. Great that you think that. But the other thing is that, look, if it was a monetary thing, like someone was using my my image to make money and not giving me compensation for it, that's one thing. Because, hey, it's money. I want my money, you know. But in terms of copyright or that kind of standpoint, like, I kind of, or at least in this particular situation, it was a situation where I was like, well, I have to be confident in thinking that this artist, if he does any work, but if he is a guy who's just passing, you know, or copying my stuff, I have to think that I provide a value to the reader, to the consumer, to the companies, to the art fan, whoever, that I can provide something that this guy can't just by copying my stuff. Do you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And the thing that separates me from this person just copying my stuff is the fact that I know how to do – I know why I did the stuff that I did. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. And he's,
you know what
just,
I'm talking about? Yeah, I mean, like, that's a bad example, but I guess that's the reason why clones, you know, like, of other people's styles, like, you know, people who clone, I don't know, whomever. It's one of those things where it's like they will never provide as much value as the original guy, because even if they look exactly the same, they will never know why the original person did what they did. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So because of that, the best that the clone can achieve is a copy of the other guy. And even if it's a really, really good facsimile, it's just that. It's just a copy. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And that's what I get out of it, the learning and stuff. I mean, they'll never get that. They'll just learn as much as
what they're copying.
Right. Exactly. They'll only learn what is presented in front of them. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Exactly. It's like if they just took, like, a cover and they copied, like, the stance of the characters and just did a different version of that. It's not the same as why you did that specific stance for those characters.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, there's definitely, like, I'm not saying that you can't learn from other people. I mean, like, hell, like, I try to, you know, learn from other people all the time. Like, even now, like, the editor on Green Lantern, Brian Cunningham, before I started, he was like, hey, you know, your stuff is good, but it's really stiff. So, you know, work on certain stuff. And I was like, oh, really? And then the first thing he did was shoot me the names of Buscema and Wood and, you know, just these artists, these classic artists that just really nailed down getting dynamic poses and, you know, having characters that are in repose but still look dynamic and not stiff. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I basically, you know, tried to, you know, read all those books like Conan and stuff, and then I ran into deadlines and I was like, screw it, I'm just doing it the way I do it. But when I look at that stuff, I mean, like, I think everyone should be inspired, like, should try to learn the lessons that these guys learned. But when you look at a Buscema piece or a Wally Wood piece or whatever, try to get behind why they did that. Try to see why bending the knee this way makes it look dynamic. Don't just draw the knee that way. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's a good thing. And I think from that point of view, I think the artist community, the comic book art community, is very supportive of fostering a community where everyone learns but doesn't steal and copy. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what I can't remember who it was, like Picasso or fucking I don't know whoever said the difference between borrowing and stealing. You know what I'm saying? I can't remember what the quote is. Shit, I was trying to sound smart, but it's basically like the guy who's like, you know, if you borrow, you're just doing that. You're just taking what was presented and just copying it. When you steal, you're making that your own. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know what the you know, you make it your own. Like what that guy, I don't know, I guess. But what that guy, like, does, why he does it, now you know why he does it. It's like why you've learned that lesson, now you can do what he does, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Man, that's really cool. And also, like, you know, we were kind of talking about you learning and progressing. Like, I noticed, like, you know, like when you first started with Witchblade, you had people were inking your stuff, and then like you were slowly and surely, like you were kind of leaving that behind, and people were painting over your stuff digitally, and then after that, now you're doing the coloring yourself. It's like you're learning all the stuff, and then you're kind of adding and subtracting, to your art, which I think is pretty cool. The covers that you've been doing is the first time you've actually colored yourself, right? Or have you done this while you were at Marvel or at any point?
You know what? The very first piece I ever colored was Astonishing Thor #4 cover. That was the very first thing I ever colored. Mm-hmm. Like, that was just an experimentation. I think I had to redo that thing like 3 times because I realized I was doing stuff wrong. Mm-hmm. But it was just something I wanted to try. Honestly, what it is that, you know, mm-hmm. doing different styles, it's not so much like I want to, there is definitely some of the control freak aspect of it, but definitely, like, I kind of see it as, like, part of the process. I mean, in the end, the end piece is the most important thing, you know?
Yeah.
And the end product is the thing that's in the person's hand while they read it on the toilet. That's the most important thing. So it kind of wavers between that and also, like, hey, I've got this vision that I have in my head of what this thing needs to look like in order to get the maximum impact, or the script says this, and for it to fulfill this, it needs to look this way as close as possible. And I like being able to kind of see that vision go as far as it can, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And definitely for the Astonishing Thor piece, like, there was an idea that I had. I wanted to present it that way. And, you know, I basically, it was just an experiment. I think I gave Ralph, who was the editor at the time, who no longer, I think he left to start
retired.
Writing. He was mm-hmm. like, yeah, he was one of the best editors I ever had. But he gave me the opportunity to, like, hey, you know, try coloring it, and if it sucks balls, then we'll get someone else. We'll get someone good to color it. You know what I'm saying? So I did it. He seemed to like it, and you know, I've been coloring off and on like since then. I mean, like, I don't color for Marvel anymore, but definitely, like, DC's been very good in terms of you know, giving me the opportunity. So yeah.
That speaking of Astonishing Thor, we'll kind of get into some of your work. That was an amazing book. It's probably your latest work, and you've applied everything you've learned into that book, and it's one of the most beautifully illustrated things I've seen. And I'm actually flipping for the book right now. I'm looking at the cover #4, which you said you colored, and I didn't realize that was you. That was it really does. It looks very painterly, and you know, and to a point, like, I can, it kind of feels like it was hand painted. So that, you know, props to you for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, like, you know how, like, when most people color their stuff, they go in with the underlying separation of each of the element in the piece, which is called flatting. I don't even know that yet.
Yeah.
But I didn't even flat it because I didn't know that you had to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was a skip that I completely – it would have saved so much time if I had done that. But, like, you know, I didn't even do that because I honestly thought to myself, hey, of course I could just go over this, like, and – but, it, you know, so basically, like, stuff that I color now looks nothing like stuff that I colored then. And obviously there's going to be people who say, well, I liked it better then, but, like, you know, whatever. But, yeah.
But, yeah, your stuff in that book was – pretty amazing. Now, I've been curious because I know you've been doing stuff digitally. Was this drawn by hand, or was this all digital, or Thor? I mean, that entire book.
Oh, you mean like before Frank colored it?
I was wondering if you drew this by hand, like the actual.
Oh interiors. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, like the first issue. Mm-hmm. No, the first issue was completely done by pencil mm-hmm. on paper. Mm-hmm. But then towards the end, what I would start doing is kind of laying the stuff out and then inking it in Photoshop. But when I ink it, it wasn't inking it like just going over the lines. It was doing like the tonal work in Photoshop.
Tone and hatching and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, not even the hatching, but so much as like, I mean, honestly, there's no point in hatching in Photoshop, short of like it looks cool. You know what I'm talking about? But like, you know, hatching was done because it was, you know, back when, you know, things had to be inked and everything had to be black and white. Hatching was the way to create grays. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So Photoshop, you just create grays using like 50% opacity or whatever. And, you know, I started doing that stuff. And, you know, I don't know, like I kind of really like the idea of everything that I do, I'm not 100% sure how to do it. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I approach Astonishing Thor. That's honestly how I approach pretty much everything now. In terms of, I have, you know what? A part of me has no idea how I'm going to do this aspect. But then you kind of learn on the fly. And I think that's good because it allows for a lot of experimentation. It keeps you interested in the piece.
Of course.
And, you know, it Like definitely, in like the thing that I'm actually most proud of from Astonishing Thor is the shot of the two planets, one eating the other.
Yeah, and, that was awesome.
when I got the script for that from Robert, it just basically said two planets going against each other, using you know, like weather, lightning and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. But how the hell are you going to depict lightning clouds on a global level? You know what I'm talking about? Uh-huh. Like, how can you have like two planets that have to fit on a double page spread? I mean, that basically means that each page is only going to be like maybe 6 inches tall, 6 inches wide on a sheet of paper. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So how, like, if that's how big the thing is going to be, it's going to be hard to depict stuff as small, you know, from a scale wise, as like an earthquake. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Or something. What's something that could like be more less surface-y? You know, like my hand right now is doing all this kind of gesturing that no one's ever gonna see. But how are you gonna do? How are you gonna depict all that stuff? And I basically said, what if I just have one planet eating the other? And they're like, yep, do it. So I basically drew that and. But anyway, that's not the thing I was most proud of. The thing that I'm most proud of in terms of that one is almost all of the rendering is on the computer. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was just very, very minimal cross-hatching. But after I got bored of that, I just scanned it and just started doing stuff on the in Photoshop. And basically, I'm sure Frank did a lot more than this, but basically it was to the point where all that the colors would need to do is just put flat color on it. You know what I'm saying? Because I basically established all the gray tonal stuff, and that's basically how I presented it to Frank. And obviously, Frank being Frank, just totally just kicked the ass of it by adding all this other stuff, like all this surface detail and all the... Basically, he's the one... I basically drew two globes, like two spheres going up against each other. He's the guy that made them planets. You know what I'm saying? and that's why Frank deserves so much of the freaking credit on that book. But, anyway, that was the little piece that I was proud of in terms of, I think this was around the time where I was actually like, hey, man, I'm actually like, you know, a little bit more confident in how I'm using Photoshop. I flatted it. I kind of, you know, was getting used to using the brushes in Photoshop. And, yeah, it's just all a learning process. And then Photoshop 7 or CS or whatever came out, and I was like, shit, I got to learn all that shit again. But I'm learning seriously from the ground up. Like, seriously, like telling someone, like, I did not know the difference between brush and pencil until maybe a week ago, and I colored an entire book and like seven covers or whatever. That's just ridiculous. But you know, that's the learning process. I wish I took a class or something.
As someone who has no idea about Photoshop, you really can't tell.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, and man, that was such a gorgeous book, man. I'm seriously, I mean, everyone kind of got used to you as being the guy who does X-Men stuff, and then you do this, and you're basically unleashed upon the world, because this book was, it was epic in scale. You got to draw all these cool cosmic characters, and it was such a fun book. And I mean, I'm glad that they put it out in an oversized hardcover instead of like a premier hardcover, because you get to see the pages somewhat large, you know. Yeah, you got to be proud of what you actually pulled off in this book. It's
yeah, that was definitely an honor. I mean, it's not something that there are different reasons why I was proud of that book. This is around the time where I was going through a lot of personal stuff and actually also professionally, and the fact that the book even got done, I think, is the thing that I'm most proud of. That first issue, I mean, I had basically a year to do the book, because the book came out bi-monthly. But, that first issue took about 6 months. I mean, basically, I did nothing other than, like, this book and just deal with stuff. And, and the fact that even the – and that's honestly the reason why I keep going back to this is why I mentioned earlier that Ralph really was one of the best editors that I ever had, because he – I think editing is all about, you know, giving a person, you know, obviously beyond the scheduling on a lot of stuff, they also have to deal with a lot of egos and a lot of personalities. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, he knew I was, you know, going through some stuff, and he gave me just enough room to kind of like, just enough leash, but also not enough that I wouldn't get the book done. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think definitely like it's awesome that, you know, he was, you know, once I got back on schedule, he was like, hey, if you want to try coloring this thing, we can always not use it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was great. And, he gave me that opportunity. And, you know, I've been told straight up by people, nope, you can't color it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, the fact that he gave me the opportunity where, I mean, I love coloring so much that I've actually done projects where I was like, hey, I'll color this for free. And they're like, no. You know? Because obviously, like, you know, I guess, like, you know, a lot of, you know, people have, like, confidence in my my penciling abilities, but definitely not in my coloring abilities. But that's because I feel like they're thinking about it in two separate steps. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But honestly, I kind of like to think of it in terms of more, I want to draw it and then finish it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And basically, Marvel's basically the company that won't let me color anything, but it's because they have a stable of really good colorists and that they have confidence in, and
so to them,
I can't fault that at all.
Yeah, so to them, you're kind of an untested quantity, an untested property.
Exactly. Honestly, I think the thing is, and this is the main thing, is that I'm working with colors that are really good, first of all, you know? I got to work with Maury a little bit on these Fantastic Four covers, but I'm working now with Lee Duig, Guru FX, who I fucking love that guy. He lives in San Antonio, too, where I grew up, and we trade stupid stories about San Antonio, but, he's just awesome to work with. He works with whatever style I give him, whatever attitude, whatever kind of tone I want to work in. You know, we have a call before every single project, and we kind of go through, what we want to achieve with each piece. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. So not only do they have access to these really great colorists, but also I think the thing is they would rather I pencil two covers than draw and color one cover. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why definitely I could just be like, yeah, of course you don't want me to color? That's totally fine. I can understand that. It's not, I don't think it's then necessarily saying, nope, your coloring sucks so bad that we don't give a shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's just that from that attitude. Or that's what I'm telling myself. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, they think of you. I mean, they know you primarily as a penciler and not as a painter or a multi, you know, or someone who does multi functions. Whereas with DC, since you're kind of new there, you're actually able to kind of, you know, do pitch your fully painted or your fully colored stuff, because, you know, they haven't worked with you to a point where they only think of you as being able to do one thing. And I imagine since you've been an exclusive with Marvel for some time, they're used to you as being the guy that pencils, and not the guy that can do everything. So I think they will probably need to warm up to that or get used to that, or maybe they just like your pencils better. But I can kind of see where they're coming from.
I honestly don't think it's like a matter of like, I think it's just exactly how you said. And like, I can totally see that. That's totally cool. And, for me, it's just kind of, hey, basically, ultimately, I am a commercial artist. I do what the client asks of me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, I derive so much pleasure from coloring that, honestly, I like coloring better than I like penciling. But that's why, like, my own stuff, my creator-owned stuff, I'm coloring all of that stuff. Because it's not so much that I'm coloring it. Hey, if I'm writing it, hey, I'm not a writer. I can't write. But the thing is, like, I have this story I want to tell. I want to present it in the way that I want to do it. And that's why I'm coloring it and writing it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So. Can you talk about your creator-owned book a little bit, if you want? Or if you can, it's all right.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I mean, like, it's basically, like... it's just stuff that I am doing for my own self, like Chomper Stompers I did, which is basically a reality, a fictional, obviously, reality TV show following zombie hunters.
Mm-hmm.
That one was presented more because I wanted to do a webcomic. It wasn't intended for publishing. Like, basically, it was just 3 pages of story per episode, quote-unquote episode. And it was just going to be free and all this stuff, but I don't know how well I was promoting it. I've got like a few issues of material, but it's kind of something that like I don't think that's the way to do it. Having 3 pages, a 3-page story every couple months. Like, I don't think people are interested in that really. So I think what needs to happen is I need to finish an entire season, which would take about a year. And then just release that, a lot more regularly. But, it's one of those things where I tried to do it on Twitter, and it's basically a free thing that I was trying to market out there. But I don't know if, it really got a foothold. So I think from now on, I'm just going to probably try more conventional things. You got a story. I think with Chomper Stomp is also another reason that it might have failed, is I was thinking about it wrong in terms of I was thinking about the distribution before I actually thought of the story, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to shoehorn like the regularity of the story into the story. Regularity of the release of the story as opposed to the story itself. So that was probably a mistake on my part. So now, from now on, I'm trying to like change the nature of Chomper Stompers and my other projects to just be a story that I can release however I want. I have a couple stories which I was just like, this is the main reason I didn't sign an exclusive, is not because, I didn't appreciate the work and the regularity of the work, but more because I wanted to be able to dictate exactly what I wanted to do creator-owned stuff-wise. Because, when you sign an exclusive contract, you can still work on your creator-owned stuff, but you have to create that carve-out, you know what I'm saying? You have to say, this is the thing that I'm going to be working on, and... it's going to be released, whatever. And I honestly have no idea what I'm going to work on. And maybe that's a bad thing in and of itself, but I kind of wanted the freedom to do whatever I wanted. And I get paid less. I have less security being a freelance. There's a lot more, stress and heartburn and all that stuff. But I think it's ultimately a better place that I'm at because I get to, dictate exactly what I'm going to be working on.
Yeah, it's more satisfying for you as far as your creativity is concerned.
Right. And, there's a project that, I can kind of pick amongst projects. Like, obviously, like, someone gives you Green Lantern, you're going to be like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm going to take that. Especially, like, I met up with Jeff Johns and, talked about it a little bit, and that was really, you know, really cool because he was telling me about, you know, all the stories and all the emotions that you want to portray, and this is kind of the evolution of the character, you know, and I'm just looking at him the whole time going, Jeff Johns. But, you know, that was really cool, so obviously I'd take that gig. But my next project is actually going to be a really, really short three-page story with DC, but after that, it's going to be a project which I'm not sure I can say yet with Marvel, you know? So it's basically, I'm basically a whore. I'm just basically going left and right, but...
Hey, man, you got to do what
you got to do. But obviously, like, during all of this, like, I'm leaving the room where necessary to do my own stuff that I want to do for myself, the stuff that I will probably never get any money for, but the stuff that I... you know how I said that, you know, I'm almost getting paid to learn? Well, I'm not 100% comfortable with that, you know what I'm saying? So it would be nice if I could do that learning stuff, like doing stuff where I can, like, you know, realize that, oh, the V button is to move the selected pixels on Photoshop. If I could actually be, like, doing that on my own stuff as opposed to, like, stuff where people are actually paying money to do this. So, like right now, like I'm actually in between doing stuff right now at this moment. So I'm actually doing a page for my other creator-owned stuff, which is, I go back and forth between two books that are developed the furthest. Mm-hmm. One is called Carol from Accounting. They all start with C's for some reason. Thomas Carol from Accounting. Basically, it's that one actually, like, I just got a huge change to it. So I'm gonna, like, hold off on talking about that, but
okay.
the other one is called Communion, and that's the thing that I'm working on right now, and it's basically Twilight, but instead of vampires, it's the devil. it's basically that kind of story. I've always been interested in, like, you know, that kind of stuff, like angels and devils and stuff, but it's not really like that. It's not like fucking City of Angels with, like, fucking Meg Ryan. What a stupid movie. Anyway, so stupid. Oh, what a stupid movie. But I love that kind of stuff, so that movie sucked. Oh my God, Meg, stupid idiot. It's kind of the stuff that I've been interested in. It's not so much like, you know, obviously, like Paradise Lost, I'm interested in the whole Milton story and all that stuff. But basically, it's not so much that. It's not about religion. It's not about that kind of stuff. It's just basically... It's basically a love story. It's kind of like Paradise Lost, but from the point of view of the devil. But at the same time, it's kind of like, a story that I don't see being done by Marvel or DC. You know what I'm saying? If someone else had written it and pitched it to me, and I would love to draw it, because it's not about, you know, who come up with it first. It was like, hey, because I want to draw this story. And, that's basically, those are the things that I'm working on right now. I mean, this story I was supposed to get done, like, a long time ago, but, you know, I gotta work on the stuff that, I committed to, that I'm gonna get paid for, and that's, like, where the DC and Marvel stuff come in. And obviously, like, it's one of those things where it's, like, you really want to tell your stories like this, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
At the same time, the number one reason why, when they mentioned Green Lantern, and I was like, holy shit, Green Lantern, was because up until this point, I was completely unfamiliar with the character, but then I saw the movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about, I know about you guys, I know about everyone else, but I actually really, really liked the Green Lantern movie.
That's okay, man. I mean, it wasn't for me. It had its moments, but you know what? If you liked it, it's all good, man. I'm not going to...
I felt it had potential, but it wasn't fully there.
You know what? It's one of those things where how many times have I said the words, it's one of those things? Anyway, it's one of those things where I didn't mind Ryan Reynolds in it. I thought it was just Ryan Reynolds being pretending to be Ryan Reynolds. But, like, the thing that I liked was the concept of the core, which I was completely unfamiliar with. The idea of different colors signifying different emotions, signifying different core. I mean, how awesome is that? You know what I'm saying? You know what it was? Mm-hmm. The idea of the core being of all these different planets, all these different life forms, kind of goes back to the coolness factor of it. Is growing up with Transformers and G.I. Joe.
Uh-huh.
I I don't know any person who has like who has like, you know, at least one tiny creative bone in their body who didn't come up with their own ideas for Transformers and own ideas for G.I. Joes. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, that's the kind of thing that you think of when you think of the Green Lantern Corps. It's like, imagine all these different life forms, and they all have the same objective. And the idea of that was just so cool to me. And this current issue that I'm doing is very Sinestro-centric.
Yeah, he's been the Green Lantern since, you know, the relaunch. So
yeah,
he's been the main guy, and he's a very interesting character. I thought,
absolutely,
he was actually the best part of the movie, in my opinion. His character was
him and Kilowog I liked a lot.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, but you know, which is insane because I actually am really sick and tired of Mark Strong being the bad guy in all these movies. But, you know, it's seriously, he's in everything, man. I swear to God. But you know, when they told me that Green Lantern, I was like, hell yeah, man. I'd love to do it just because I really like the movie. I like the concept. And for me to be a part of that, I thought it would be really cool. And I since actually, my wife's been playing the video game, so I played it with her. And that was a fun video game. It introduces, like, the Sapphire Core or whatever they're
Star
called. Star Sapphires. And that was really cool. I mean, the idea of these different cores being represented by – I mean, sorry, these different emotions being represented by different colors, being represented by different cores, I thought was really awesome. And basically, that whole 5 minutes or however long I've been talking, spiel, was basically me fanboying out about Green Lantern. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, you know what?
Yeah, that was all John's, right? That was – yeah, right?
But it's something that I just discovered, you know?
Oh, no, totally, yeah. Like, well, look, I felt the same way when I first heard about it. And to me, with the long history of Green Lantern, I thought to myself, how did no one else come up with this until now?
Mm-hmm. It's one of those kind of like... It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it kind of I could understand why it would make a movie watcher not want to watch it because it's almost too broad. You know what I'm saying? You kind of want to just watch the adventures of one unique individual. But you know, the idea of this person being part of many, it's kind of like hard to relate to, I guess. But I don't know. I actually like that concept, and I like portraying that concept. So that's basically like me saying, like, you know. You know, I'm a big Green Lantern fan now, and a big, honestly, I was not a DC fan. You know, I couldn't get into any of the continuity and stuff because I didn't understand what the hell was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like the individual, like out of continuity stories, I love, like Red Sun. It's one of my favorite books.
Oh,
All-Star Superman is probably my absolute favorite book. Mm-hmm. Of all time, I own a double page spread and one of the covers for that book. I love it so much, and I love Frank Whiteley, and I love Grant Morrison, and I'm a huge fan.
Have you ever read JSA Liberty Files? That's also a really great Elseworlds story. I know Tony Harris is the artist in that. That's a really good book.
Oh, I love Tony Harris. Yeah, I'll add it to the list, but it's only recently that, like Justice. I'm looking at my floor right now, the Alex Ross Justice book is on the floor. And these are all books that I'm only just starting to get into because, you know, I liked the – it's really weird. The way I put it is that I could be burning two bridges here, but I like the characters of DC, the concepts of the characters of DC better than Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the stories of Marvel better.
I know as a big 100 Bullets fan that you are, you need to check out Brian Azzarello's and Edward Risso's Batman story, Broken City, because that's one of the best Batman stories I've ever
read. I love that book. I mean, like, that was awesome. I love the two assassins named after the atomic bombs. I mean, like, it's such a great book. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are exceptions to that rule that I made up. I mean, it's not like that. I mean, it's basically by my guidelines of I like the idea of the fact that so few of the. I like the fact that Superman's an alien. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I like the fact that Wonder Woman's from an otherworldly nation. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
I like the idea that the character like Martian Manhunter. That thing's so dope, and the design of it is so, superficially unattractive. You know what I'm saying? And yet at the same time, it's such a cool character. I like the fact that Aquaman is you know, fucking from Atlantis and stuff, and he's a major part of the Justice League. And I love all this stuff, these concepts, but obviously because they're so otherworldly, the stories of the Marvel characters that are, you know, basically a guy from Queens or you know, a guy from wherever, Yancey Street and all that stuff. I mean, like, these stories are obviously more relatable, but, you know, it's just basically, like, each company's stuff has their own stuff that, you know, that I like
that
and
gravitate towards,
am a fan of. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously there are exceptions. I mean, but that's the other thing is, like, I also remember telling someone that, like, at the same time that I was doing a Batman cover, I mean, like, fucking Batman, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's Batman,
yeah.
You know? But
yeah.
At the same time I was doing Batman cover, I was also doing this other Fantastic Four cover. And while I was doing Batman, the Batman cover, like, while I was doing it in Photoshop, I swear to God, the whole time I was going, na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. But as much of a fan of Batman I am, I love doing the Fantastic Four cover because I was drawing Galactus. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I love that cover you did with Doom and Franklin.
I thought that was kind of cool. It was my idea to have him do that fascist salute thing.
Yes.
Like, he was actually supposed to look like kind of you know, just like smarmy and like it's supposed to be a badass shot, but kind of like Doom taking him under his wing and stuff. But I thought, hey, let's make him a Nazi. Like, well, he already had that kind of Aryan, kind of like that hairstyle and that kind of like young you was it? I don't know, whatever,
Hitler,
but like. Yeah, Hillary, there we go. Yeah, that kind of like, you know, so I was just like, oh, let's play up on that. But, you know, I thought it came out good. Jonathan liked it. Because,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah.
Definitely
cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the cover's supposed to say something, you know, and I love Jonathan's covers, and I love how, like, his covers just say stuff with, like, you know, like his stuff for Image and stuff. It's just so, like, banging in your face because the design is so graphic, and I just want to kind of keep everything as not noodly as possible. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
So now it's like I kind of stopped doing the cross-hatching and the grayscale stuff because I think that just get the message on the thing and just get it out there, and Lee's going to kick ass on it. And, yeah, just make it as simple as possible, least lines as possible, but get the message across. It's kind of like a... Kind of like how I'm assuming Dave Johnson approaches his covers, you know? Like, they're just so graphic and so just like, this is what you're supposed to be. This is why you need to look at the book, you know? But anyway,
yeah.
Like, that's what I'm trying to do and failing miserably. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like I'm a huge fan of it. And just go back to my original point from, like, what, 15 minutes ago. The creator-owned stuff is great because I have these stories that I want to tell. But at the same time, the reason why I wanted to work for Marvel and I wanted to work for DC is because I was a fan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it looks
and
like you're
I'm still
are.
A fan now.
Yeah, that's,
yeah
that's,
I'm still a fan. Of course I am. Like, I will actually go, damn it, fuck it. I am so sick and tired of this damn comic book page. I need a break. I'm going to pick up a comic book. You know what I'm saying? How awesome is that? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you to take a break from your work, you go to the stuff that your work is for. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And I love that. And my floor is completely just covered with comic books. And, you know, because I'm a slob, but B, also because, you know, I'm just, you know, a huge fanboy. I mean, like, When I started working, I mean, fuck, you have no idea, man. When I first went into the DC studios in Burbank, the DC offices, and they showed me their back issue, their trade
library,
their trade library or whatever, and they were just like, hey, is there anything that you need? I was like, you know, I think I passed out for like maybe half a second. Then
I was like, do you have a truck?
I mean, when he was like, I mean, like, I was like, shit, you guys got a shopping cart or something? I don't know. And, like, Adam Schlagman, he was, I think now he's doing the more broad entertainment side of DC, but he used to be an editor at, you know, back in New York, but he moved out here. Great guy, awesome guy. He was just basically like, hey, if you need anything to, you know, get the backstory, get you used to, more acclimated to the DC universe, hey, just pick something up. And, fuck, man, I went to town. I went apeshit. I mean, like, you know, there's that first where you have to pretend to be all, no, thank you, I'm fine, you know. But, you know, that lasted, again, the other half of the second. And I just went, I was just sort of like, hey, is it okay if I take this? And eventually he was just like, yeah. And I swear to God, like, I left just a huge handful of crap, and it was just, like, awesome. And it's like all these Jeff Johns books, all these hardcovers, all these trades, and it's just like awesome. And then they took me to the DC merchandise section. And I love you know, the Sideshow statues and these maquettes and stuff. So I obviously had to get an Adam Hughes DC Woman maquette, which literally they were like, take whatever you want. Hey, I'm not gonna not take whatever I want. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna pretend and be like, no, you know what? There's plenty of time for this. And you know what? Hey, I don't need any of this stuff. Like, I'm professional. I'm just gonna. But you know, literally that lasts about a minute, and then you're just like, oh my god, look what you got here. You know, I have a DC sweatshirt, and I've got like, you know, like the statue, and like all these books and all these toys and stuff. And it's like, I think that's what it is. Like, this is my candy. You know what I'm saying? These are my toys. You know what I'm saying?
I gotta go put this in my car, and I'll be right back.
Exactly. Like, when you have the stuff. I mean, this is in the middle of the quote unquote tour. Oh, video games. We left with video games. I mean, that's where the Green Lantern video game came from. It was insane. The Christmas, I swear to God. And, like, it was one of those situations where, like, it was in the middle of the you know, just walking around the office. And the rest of the time, we're just carrying all this crap with us. And I'm just like, oh, shit. Can we, like, go to my car? You know what I'm saying? Like, cut the stuff off. But I mean, like, it just goes to show, like, man, that's some generous shit. Or we were just helping them take out their trash. I don't know. But, like, it was just how, like, either the enthusiasm that – was that?
I said either way, you win.
Hell yeah. The bottom line is that – hell, of course I win. But, like, the bottom line is that, look, and this is exactly where – you know what I'm saying? When this is why I left IBM. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I still really like to code. There's something that, you know, when you code something and the program works the way that it's supposed to without any bugs, that's a high that I don't think I'll ever get. You know what I'm saying? It's an actual cool feeling. But you know, I was never a fan of coding. I'm not a fan of IBM. I'm not like cheering for IBM over Hewlett Packard. Yeah, fuck you, Hewlett Packard. But it's. Like, this right here is, you know, the fact that I can actually, like, walk into the D.C. library and just be like, like, that, I think, right there is why I'm doing this stuff. It's like, yeah, as much of it is the learning how to draw and how to color and all that stuff. But the other half is like, hey, it doesn't have to be just Marvel in D.C. It doesn't have to be whatever. I mean, I just got to fight Ed Brubaker's Fatal. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's just like just good story, and like you said, 100 bullets. I mean, these are all like comics are just fucking awesome, man. How awesome Hell are yeah. comics? You know what I'm saying?
Me and Pat talk about comic books a lot.
You know what? Seriously,
our favorite comic books are done by guys like you and who still, I mean, look, we're not even talking about the craft anymore. We're just fanboying over comics.
Yeah, and then you know? Yeah,
just to have moments strange. Like this with people who actually make comics makes me love comics even more, because I know you're not doing it because you have to. You're doing it because you want to.
And I love it.
Seriously, comics better. I mean, like, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, it's not easy. I mean, I don't think anyone in comics from the publishing companies to the editors to the creators to the, you know, writers, artists, pencilers, colorists, inkers, letterers, all the way down to the distribution, all the way down to the retailers, the guy behind the desk, the people behind the counter. Everyone puts in 115%. I mean, this is an industry that has such slim margins in terms of, like, what constitutes, like, a success and a failure, and everyone has to work double time. The thing is that you have to love it, otherwise you'll never last, you know? And, like, there's a sentiment that says that, look, in order to make it into comics, you have to stop being a fan and you have to be a pro. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You kind of have to stop being a fanboy and you have to see this as a job. But you know what, motherfucker? You cannot. If you just think of this as a job, you'll never last, because you will make more money as if you're a waiter at Morton's or something, you would definitely make a lot more money. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, on a per hour basis, like, even while I was on the first issue of Witchblade, my first issue of Witchblade, I was making less than minimum wage because I was putting in that many hours per page. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. That's what this industry seems to demand, and every one of us gives it wholeheartedly because we're a fan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know that you can't just be a fan and just be satisfied with, hey, I'm doing a DC book now. Now I'm going to go play video games. It's more that you have to, you know, take it seriously and stuff, and you have to, you know how important the deadline is. But more than that, in order to keep going, you have to keep loving it, and you have to go with it from a perspective of, hey, the feeling that I get when I read a really great comic book, like, fuck, man. Like, I got reading through All-Star Superman again. I cannot not choke up when I'm reading that thing. You know what I'm saying? There are parts of 100 Bullets where also the same thing. Like, you get emotional, like, reading that stuff. And I can't remember. There are other books. They just get really emotional. Like, just Powers. There's a sequence in Powers where it's the death of spoiler alert, because I'm sure people are going to hopefully, like, yeah. But, like, when Zora dies... You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
God.
That's a great scene. And the thing about
the
that is, that was, and you know what? That is one of those things that also I'm a huge fan of, is the relationship between everyone involved in the book. And the thing is that Brian Bendis is known as one of the most verbose writers, but there's a sequence in there leading up to that point where it's just action. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like, the way that Brian and Mike Oeming work together, I get the feeling they could almost read each other's minds, and that thing was just so, just like, you know, it's like, whatever. The thing is, that sequence is everything that is so great about comic books. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you
that,
had one of those sequences. I mean, when I read that issue,
I'm not going to even talk about my stuff. Like, cause I'm not going to say like
I'm just saying,
about my
like,
stuff.
Like what you were talking about with Powers, when fucking Nightcrawler bit it. In your book, and I fucking choked up. I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't. I gotta stop. I gotta put this down.
Hey, man, that makes me happy, man. Because seriously, when I read the script, like when I read Craig and Chris's script, and being a huge fan of Nightcrawler and seeing how he dies, the approach was, I hope I don't fuck this up. You know what I'm saying?
I put the book down. I stopped reading. I was like, no, I can't do this right now.
I think we talked about it for a while too, didn't we? After that happened,
yeah.
Just like, man, that was.
It was completely
an honor to do that, and I'm glad that I was able to, I choked up when I was reading the thing. And basically, it's the idea of, hey, how I feel when I read the script, it better come through in the art. And whoever reads the art better feel the way that I did when I read the script, if not more. Otherwise, I haven't added anything, but if not more. You know what I'm saying? At the very least, don't fuck it up and take that away, you know?
Yeah.
And I honestly, you know, I was happy with that. I actually added a panel, which, you know, was kind of a decision where I'm not 100% sure. I think it was a good idea on my part. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. But it was the shot where you kind of see Nightcrawler looking up at Hope, and it's the shot where you can kind of see from Nightcrawler's point of view when you're looking at Hope, and you kind of see the bright light behind her. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of like the light. You know what I'm saying? The come towards the light type action, and you know, I added that in there, and people seem to like it. I don't do that kind of stuff anymore where I, like, decide to, like, you know, add panels like that. But that was one instance when I was doing that, and I thought it came out pretty good. I think it added a little bit more. I've done it, so, you know, since then, and it hasn't worked out so well, but...
Well, that whole sequence turned out really good. I mean, even especially when Wolverine goes says elf, you know, I was like, oh man.
Oh yeah, that's all the script. That's all the writing.
It is a collaboration, so you know, I thought you pulled it off really well too, because the facial expression and the way just the way his body was posed and everything, it's like you can really tell this was pretty devastating for them. So yeah,
thank you.
That was awesome. Now, before we close up, I do have a few listener questions that we'll get to. First question, I mean, not really a question, but it's a comment from George Cox, and he says, let him know that his work on X-Force was some of my favorite stuff I've seen in years. He really knocked it out of the park.
Thanks.
Next one is from Gabe Bustamante, and his question is, what happened to your plan to critique comic shops, and where can someone get a commission?
Oh, shit, man. Like, that's one of those things where I'm sorry.
It's okay.
That's one of those things that, I still feel this in terms of they are – I mean, I think given that I get a lot of my comic books, not just because I do not have the time to go out there, but I actually download a lot of my comic books. So I guess it's less in my face, and also my local comic books are actually – the stores are actually really great stores. Mm-hmm. But also I haven't been going to any conventions. I've been doing next to no traveling. But back when I was doing a lot of conventions and a lot of traveling and doing that drive from Texas to California, you know, I'd see a lot of stores. And these guys are the face of our industry to the consumers. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And you know, every time I see a great one, I get so happy. Like a great store, like Austin Books and Comics in Austin, Texas. Meltdown,
I've been
California. My local store is It's House of Secrets in Burbank, and that's a really great store. When I see a really, really great store, it makes me happy. You know, from a standpoint of, you guys are going to sell more books, and you guys are going to help pay my rent. But more than that, it's like, as a huge comic book fan, you guys are great ambassadors for our industry that I love so much. But then, and when I see a good one, I'm like, oh, this is what you're doing so well. This is what's so good. And I wanted to kind of tout that shit and kind of like help promote that store. But for every great store, there's a shitty ass store. And we're just like, you're just presenting such an awful face for our industry. And, you know, it's one of those things where I'm saying I'm going to, you know, show you, you know, shit on you in public. It's so much as just like saying this is, you know, I wasn't completely sure if I was going to name names when it came to negative stuff like that, because I'm all, you know, I try to be positive and try to be about positivity. But definitely say this is what people are doing right and this is what other people are doing wrong. And basically if the store is doing this, it's not going to attract customers because of this, this, and that. And, you know, this is when I was going, you know, traveling the country and stuff. And I'm one of those people that whenever I go to someplace new, I want to check out their comic book store. Like, I can't walk past a comic book store without wanting to go in. Even if it's Thursday and I just went to the comic book store. It's because it's like a toy store. It's like a place that I just want to go and say, hey, look what this place has, you know? And, you know, I kind of wanted to do that. And now I get the desire to do that. Also, I'm lazy. But I'm just bitchy. But yeah, like, I still definitely want to do that, because I still say that the best way to get people into comic books, once they have a reason to get into comic books, like, for example, like, someone watches a movie or, which, by the way, I don't think that ever happens. I don't think anyone ever watches a movie and wants to see the comic book. But let's say they hear about the comic book because of some writer that they need to, you know, follow, or this artist or whatever, or this franchise. But once they get that impetus to go into a comic book, the thing that makes them either stay or go is probably the experience that they have at the comic book store. And the reason why I like House of Secrets so much is because their employees are just so great. They got that, you know, that great balance between, you know, giving you suggestions and offering their advice. And, you know, kind of said, you know, stepping back and letting you pick what you want. And I think just that kind of friendly atmosphere, I think, is just so great in getting people to kind of become, you know, not nerds, because, you know.
To become regular readers,
comic
basically.
Book, not nerds, fanboys, because I'm not saying fanboys, but just people who just see comic books as another medium of entertainment. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that'd be great. You know, I kind of would love it if people just like didn't see like a fan of comic books, or if there was no such thing as a comic book fan. You know what I'm saying? It's just someone like, is there such thing as a TV show fan? You know what I'm saying? Like a fan of TV in general. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I like TV. Yeah, it's like I'd love it if comics was just not such a niche medium, because and people saw it as a medium. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely,
be great,
because there's definitely some connotations that come with being a comic book reader. But at the same time, when I started reading comics, I got into it because I was a big Kevin Smith fan, and I found that he was doing a book for Marvel, you know, the Spider-Man Black Cat book for Marvel. But then from there, because I liked the character so much from other, you know, from like the Spider-Man cartoon and the X-Men cartoons, I went and I found a bunch of stuff out. And what my favorite thing that I learned from reading comics was it's not all superheroes. Some of my favorite comics are not superhero comics at all. I became a huge fan of crime. And just like weird or slice of life stuff. Like I'm a huge 100 Bullets fan. I love Ed Brubaker's Criminal and Sleeper. And, I'm a big Brian K. Vaughan fan. I love discovering new talent and new talent who are also just huge fans of comics. Like you, Scott Snyder. I love comics. I love comics. Yeah, I don't way love of superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, like, the reason why I'm a part of this art blog.
Syndicate.
Called The Syndicate, right. And the point of that is it wasn't a thing where we were like, hey, look at our art. Look how well we draw art. It's not about that. But, I mean, obviously, because those guys are just kicking my ass. I mean, like, holy shit. It's fucking Fuente, La Fuente, Otley, Karen, these guys are just so incredible. I just feel like such a dumbass. Colleen Coover's on it now.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I'm just looking
shit.
At your Lock and Key piece right now, and it's fucking awesome.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, the whole point of that
highlight the just new comics or different comics that are out there that aren't super. I mean, I saw you guys did a week of Luther Strode, and I'm loving that fucking comic.
Exactly. I mean, that's a book that I never would have read otherwise. It's these are the stories that like. We're trying. It's basically a book club. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Each week, one of us just recommends a book that we love, and get the other people to read it and enjoy it, become a fan of it, and then we draw a piece based on that thing that inspires us the most or whatever. I mean, like I'm not going to mention names, but one of the people was saying. I haven't had a chance to read the book. I'm just going to download images off the internet and just draw my version of it. And it's like, no, that's not the point. You know what I'm saying? That's not the point of this thing. The point is to read it first. It's almost better if you read it and never draw anything about it. You know what I'm saying? The point is to read the comic book and be inspired by this is the kind of shit that, comics is all about. And you got the Marvel and your DC stuff, but the thing that we're fans of as well is the way of telling a story in comic book form. And this is kind of a celebration of that stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
So yeah.
Yeah, because as big a fan of TV or film that I am, there are definitely stories you can't tell in those mediums that you can only tell in comic books.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm not looking forward any kind of adaptation of We3. I do not see how that's going to be done. Quite honestly, I saw the All-Star Superman DVD, the All-Star Superman movie, and yeah. I liked it, but it was honestly a huge disappointment because I don't know what it was. I think what I was expecting was a retelling of the comic book. And obviously it wasn't, and it can't be, because the comic book's the comic book, and the movie is the movie. And the movie was a great movie, mm-hmm. but it wasn't the comic book. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, it's like the opening where Morrison tells, like, Superman's whole history in, what, like, three panels? Mm-hmm. Or was it three or six panels? Mm-hmm. It's like, you can't do that with comics. You can't do that with a movie.
But that's the thing. That's just narrative. You know what I'm saying? That's just showing stuff as narrative. But the thing is, with movies and stuff, there's just so much editing and then time constraints. Well, not necessarily time constraints, but the idea of pacing is different, I think, from a movie and a comic book. Definitely. I think with the preserved music comics, you kind of learn to develop a longer attention span. You get to be able to – maybe it's because of how the stuff is presented in front of you. You can actually pick up on a lot of different plot points that you can in a movie or that you can in maybe a miniseries or whatever. But the thing is, like the thing that I love about All-Star Superman are the moments like – the moments of the girl that can't get a hold of her therapist and wants to kill herself. And that's the last thing that Superman does before he leaves, is he saves the life of that girl. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a tertiary plot line. It's like a plot line that's not important, that wasn't even depicted in the movie, I don't think, because there was no room for it. But it was so important to the comic book in terms of, well, not in terms of the comic book, but so important in terms of the collection of emotions that you feel at the end of the comic book. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, like, my big thing of, like, wow, I cannot believe they didn't do that is when the two people from the two Kryptonian cops come into Earth while Superman's not there, and they kind of take over Earth and Metropolis and kind of make fun of, you know, Clark, how he's become too human and stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He's too emotional and stuff. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, and how it's a really, really sad and touching moment, which I thought they depicted well in the movie, of, you know, how the yellow sun is starting to kill him, and you know, they were just complete douchebags in the beginning, but now they, you know, they understand why Clark, or why Kal-El is the, I'm such a nerd, why Superman is the way he is, and why emotion is good, and why sympathy is good, and why all of that stuff is a positive, and they finally learn all that stuff before they get whisked away into the Phantom Zone, you know, hands clasped together, and because they love each other so much, and this is the only way that they can be together in the Phantom Zone. And they did that in the movie, and I thought they did that well. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I loved in the comic book is the last panel, the last page is just a splash of the two of them looking badass, going, now we're in the Phantom Zone, now we're fucking cops, and now we're going to kick everyone's asses. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They, you can't do that in – you can only do that – almost. You can almost only do that with a static image. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Like a painting. And it's just so great. It's just so great. Why comics are just so awesome is that you can do that kind of storytelling thing. There's no way they could have done it in the movie. You can't do that in that kind of sequence.
Unless you pause it or something.
No, you can't. Exactly. Not unless you have it as a flash that you pause. It's an Easter egg or some shit. Mm-hmm. You cannot do that. And that's why I thought All-Star Superman. And that's why I love, you know, the collaboration. That's why I'm going to get Flex Mentality, you know, when that comes out on trade. But, yeah, on hardcover, I don't care. It's hardcover. I'm just going to go to the DC studios and get one for free. But anyway, hey, I'm here. I brought donuts. I have a free comic book.
Is that the page you have, All-Star Superman?
What's that?
You said you had a page from All-Star Superman. Is that the page?
Yeah, No. God, I wish that. Oh man, I wish that page. Now you fucking telling me about it. I bought these almost as soon as they came out. It was, but yeah. Anyway, before I get into that, yeah, that's why I love Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison so much. Is those guys are so good at presenting stories that really can only be told in comic books, mm-hmm. in the way that, you know, why comic books are so awesome. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, that's just me gushing. But no, the pages that I have are the cover to All-Star Superman 3, I think, the one where Lois gets the superpowers.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Uh-huh. That's the cover I have. And the other cover that I have is the church service where Clark is presenting the eulogy of his father.
Oh man, okay.
Yeah, that's such a great story with, like, the guy with the bandages and these things. Oh my god,
that wasn't in there.
Such a great. Oh my god, that book was. Yeah, exactly. That wasn't in the movie. Oh my god, that
I'm
book.
I'm gonna reread
just,
that book again over the next week.
Just
talking about
such
it, yeah.
an awesome. Seriously, that is the book where you read it and you're just like, this is why comics are so awesome. I mean, this is why when you draw something or when I work on anything or when I whatever, man, what I get when I read that book or when I read 100 Bullets or when I read, oh man, like 100 Bullets is like, oh my god, it's a piece of
I just started rereading it actually, so I'm
okay. So you you've read it, right?
Dude, I've read that comic like a mil. Like, dude, the last trade came out, I was doing my rereading because I wanted everything fresh in my mind for that last trade.
Seriously?
I spent like 4 hours at Starbucks just reading everything.
You can't do that, man. You cannot say, I'm just going to read an issue of 100 Bullets and get to whatever. You can't do that. If you pick up the first book, that's it. Your day is done. That's it. You're not going to move from that spot for the entire day because all you're going to do is read the trade. And the thing is, my favorite part of that entire book, I mean, it's a badass fucking book. I mean, it's a great, great book. But my favorite part is when Gabe gets his, Gabe gets his face in the bear trap. You know what I'm saying?
Man. Yeah.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. Wiley. Wiley has to, Wiley tells Gabe, he's got the gun to the back of his head, and Gabe has his hands on the gun. He's like, just go to some place, just go to your favorite place in the world. And he's thinking of him playing the trumpet with the girl. And oh my God, man, I can't even talk about it without choking up, man. How awesome is that, though? How awesome is that? And I'm convinced, can only be done in comic books. I mean, that right there is one of those things where it's like, basically, whenever I read an awesome comic book, 100 Bullets, All-Star Superman, I mean, oh my God, you guys read Earth X, right?
Oh, yes.
Earth X, and this is why I'm such a huge Galactus fan, is because as far as I'm fucking concerned, every time I draw Galactus, that's fucking Franklin in there, all right? I don't give a shit, all right?
Oh, my God.
That moment where Reed in the Doctor Doom armor saying, why would I call you Franklin? I love my son. Oh, my God, man. You cannot. Oh, my God. But you know what? Man. That's one of those things where it's I love Earth X because I love the Marvel mythos so much. I mean, like, Earth X is an alternate universe book, but it is so Marvel. You know what I'm saying? It is such a celebration of Marvel, as was that and the book that Brian Reed and Brian Bendis did. I can't remember what it was.
The Illuminati?
Called. The Illuminati.
Yeah.
That's a great book.
Are books that were just such celebrations. And I think, you know what, seriously, as much as I love DC, and I honestly, like, with the new 52, I have to admit that I read a lot more DC books now than I do Marvel books because sometimes it's now reversed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I now feel lost in the Marvel universe where it used to be the other way around. But seriously, I don't have a version of my emotions when I first read Earth X and when I first read the Illuminati when I was like, oh my God, this is why these universes are so awesome. The fact that you can bring in a concept as ludicrous as the Infinity Gauntlet, and yet you're like, oh my God, the Infinity Gauntlet! You know what I'm saying? That is just so, so great about that side of Marvel and DC. And a lot of people like say stuff like, I know I definitely do it too. I just basically say DC and Marvel, superheroes. That's a separate thing. But you know what? That genre is so rich in so much cool stuff, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just like saying like Transformers is just about robots that can transform into cars. That's not it, man. There's a lot of that. The coolness of the robots transforming into cars is not the reason why you cry like a little girl when Optimus Prime dies in the movie at the age of 33. All right?
Hey, you're not alone, Mike. You're not alone.
It's because you're invested in the whole universe and like whole, like the Matrix of leadership when that gets transferred to Hawk. I never liked Rodimus Prime. Holy crap! Whatever, man. Optimus is where it's. Ultra Magnus, I would take Ultra Magnus over Rodimus Prime. But anyway, the reason why you're tied into stuff like that is because of, in the end, they're superheroes. Yeah, they're grown men in tights. But in the end, they're great stories. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And All-Star Superman is a great story. Earth X is a great story. Illuminati is a great story. Just like 100 Bullets and just like Preacher is a great story. Also, one of my favorite pages in Preacher is a page that I own. My favorite page in Preacher I own.
Love
because it was it was my favorite line in the entire book, where I read it and I laughed like an idiot and just had to be on a plane because I made an ass of myself. But I had to buy it off eBay. I couldn't get it off Steve Dillon's art dealer's website. It was messed up because the page before that, the dealer had it for like $70, and the page after that, the dealer had it for like 110 or something. I had to buy that page on eBay for like $700, and I was in a restaurant, like on my phone, on my piece of shit phone, because this was back in like, I don't know, 2001 or whatever. And I was like, I didn't get my first cell phone until about 2001, but so this is my very first cell phone. I was like on eBay trying to like buy this thing, and it's the line where Custer basically tells Cooper to forget about all the time that he spent on the sand counting grains of sand, mm-hmm. and just says forget about it, and he forgets about it, and he probably just goes to sleep. And Tulip goes, "Well, dip me in honey and throw me to the lesbians." And I love that line so much, and I love the Vertigo pages because they actually have the speech bubbles on the page. And I had to buy that page off eBay as soon as I found it. So yeah, awesome. I mean, basically the reason why I have all this, I buy all these original art. And contrary to what people believe, I don't have a mansion. I actually don't even have a car. All I spend money on are comic book stuff and DVDs. That's it. That's all I spend money on. Occasionally food and clothing. But
that's not important.
The reason why exactly, whatever, man. I can read comic books and watch my movies naked and hungry. It's all good. But the reason why I do that stuff is because I'm a huge fanboy, and every time I read something that I love, I just want a part of it. And, you know, the original art, I guess, is a way of me owning a piece of it. And, I mean, that basically, again, goes to my original point. Man, I jibber-jabber a lot. I'm sorry. Okay. But how I feel when I read these stories is a fraction of that is what I want other people to read when I tell my stories or when I draw something that when I tell a story with other people or tell their story, whatever. It's like if I can do a fraction of what these comic books make me feel, that is a success as far as I'm concerned. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
you can't just think about it in terms of like when you see a script, you know, you can't just say, I'm just going to draw what's on the script. No, sometimes the script is the least important thing. All right, the narrative is sometimes the least important thing. Obviously, it's very, very important. But I honestly think that, in the storytelling aspect, it's not about narrative. You don't want to just tell a story, because I can tell, I can read you a manual on how to build an IKEA furniture. Actually, that's not true because it's all done in pictures. But I can just read you a bunch of facts, and that's just information. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
The most important thing, I think, and this is why I like, honestly, like music videos and other forms of entertainment so much, is because the most important thing, I think, is to make the person feel what you want them to feel. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it doesn't make sense, even if it doesn't logically, even if there's lots of holes or whatever, if you can make, obviously, if it doesn't make sense enough that they can't, you know, understand it enough to feel what you want them to feel, obviously that's a failure on your part. Mm-hmm. But if you can make them feel what you want them to feel, that's it. You know what I'm saying? So when you get the script, you have to get what is it that the writer, what is it that we want the reader to feel as they're reading this story? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, I think, the most important thing. And if I don't nail that, it's a failure. And I failed on the writer, I failed on the editorial, I failed on the reader, because that's the most important thing. If I can't convey that, I fail.
All right.
And that's my goal in terms of comic books, and I think that should be everyone's goal too.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I really appreciate the thought that you put into that, into everything you do. So that, thank you so much for that. And, you know, we're at that point of the show. Where can people find you online, Mike?
I am on Twitter, at Mike H. Choi. But seriously, don't bother, because I it's just really stupid stuff. It's stuff that I think of, and I'm like, wow, that sounds really, that makes me seem really smart. And I put it down as soon as I read it. I'm like, man, it just makes me sound like a douchebag. And, you know, it's kind of, so I tweet a lot, but when I tweet, it's usually because I'm working, and that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll be working, and I'll be, hey, that's a good thing to share with a bunch of people, and, you know, and I regret it almost immediately, but, so that's where I'm at on Twitter. I guess, I do have a DeviantArt site. I think it's Michael Choi Art, MichaelChoiArt. But again, I don't really,
We'll link to it. And of course,
yeah, I don't really update that often either. But you know, it's yeah. I mean, like, I don't do many conventions anymore. I guess, like, you know, if anyone wants to get a hold of me, I guess Twitter is the best way.
And of course, we'll link to the Syndicate blog also, so they can check out all of you guys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You guys do, which is fantastic. And Mike, also regarding Twitter, I happen to think that I enjoy your Twitter a lot. I enjoy the honesty. You know, and you know, and you know, every now and then you talk about some of the stuff that we kind of talk about here, that we kind of touch upon, but you kind of expound on things there. And I honestly appreciate everything that you say. I think you come across as very wise, even though you don't think so. But it's appreciated.
Oh no, you know, I think I'm wise, but you know, like objectively, then I step outside of myself. I'm like, wow, you are just a dumbass. Because every time I look at like someone say something, which I know they think is so smart, but you know, they might be right. But I know you think, oh man, you think you're so wise. And a lot of times, you know what, they are. They're saying this from a background of experience, from knowledge, from wisdom. I come off as like, I think that would sound great in 140 characters. Usually not the case. I'm great at sound bites, is what it is. Anyway.
Well, yeah, this recording has definitely got quite a few of that. But it's all good stuff, man. I really appreciate it. And, of course, Antonio, where can people find you online?
Yeah, people can find me online on Twitter at Antonio P. Cuneo. And also, me and Pat are part of the Pro Wrestling Noise podcast, where we talk about wrestling every week.
Awesome. And we will link to that as well. And, of course, you can find me at my usual spots at about.me/PatLoika, and it links you to all of my social networking, of course, twitter.com/PatLoika. And once again, thanks to our pals over at cheapgraphicnovels.com, where you can find a lot of the stuff that Mike has worked on, including some of his Witchblade stuff, the Astonishing Thor hardcover, X-Men Second Coming, and the X-Force oversized hardcovers, which have been coming out.
Don't read any of that stuff. Don't read any of that stuff. Get the other stuff that I talked about, like 100 Bullets.
Well, yeah, but yeah, we're plugging your work too, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mike, once again, thank you so much for doing the show.
Yeah, man.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. And we look forward to your upcoming work on Green Lantern and, of course, your covers and everything else you do, man. You're a good dude, and thank you so much for doing this again.
Thank you so much for inflating my ego a lot more than it should be. But, yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Thank you, Antonio. Thank you, Pat.
All right.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
You got the touch. You got the power. You never run, you're aware. got the power.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pat Loika. You can reach Pat by sending an email to loikamania@gmail.com. This has been a Dial R Studios production.